Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Another adventure of the Boomer and the Babe Show. Here we are. It's Monday, March 12th, 2012. Broadcasting live from our studios at the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. If anybody within the sound of my voice is interested in looking for an excellent 501c3 to donate to, be it time, effort, money, food, whatever it might be, contact Jesse Ramirez, Executive Director and Founder of Valley View Community Food Bank, and you can get him through his website, which is valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. Does a wonderful job helping stem some of the food insufficiency that we have going on here in the Phoenix Northwest Valley market. I'm Pete Peters, and I want to remind you of our listeners, that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is involved in much more than just doing this radio show. In addition to this program, we publish mini books and ebooks. Our ebook authors have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network right here on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to them as well. We produce videos for your website, promotional products, and consult for small businesses. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company, with our latest edition being Boomer Experience Speaks Online Magazine. That's Experience Speaks Online Magazine. You can subscribe to it at boomerandthebabe.com. It's absolutely free. A lot of our guests that are being on our shows and have been on our shows have written an article or a column for us, and also some of our show hosts from the Boomer Book Series authors are also doing some writing for us in the magazine. So go ahead and take a look at that, and hope you'll like it, and go ahead and register for it. We've got a very interesting guest with us today. This gentleman is somebody that's involved in helping us, the baby boomer generation, and also seniors, actually anybody, but because seniors have, as he says, such a big target on their back with regard to cyber crime and cyber scams, Ponzi schemes, and the like. He's developed a company. He's the founder and president of Eco Research Associates in California. It's a public benefit charitable corporation. They have a dual mission. One is to educate and warn the public, especially senior citizens, about internet investment Ponzi scams and fraud, as well as other varieties of cybercrime. Second, they work with federal law enforcement agencies worldwide with their investigations, providing valuable research services. Well, I'd like to welcome you to the show, Mr. Lynn Edgington of the company I had in front of me, California Public Benefit Charitable Corporation, known as Eagle Research. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Pete. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, it's our pleasure. I say ours because Deborah's here in spirit. She may even be listening to it. I know she's back at the office at the house doing some projects that she's involved in for the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. So if she were here, however, she would ask you for your 2-minute movie. So if you could go ahead and just give us a quick 2 minutes on who Lynn Edgington is and what's going on with your life and where do you hail from, as they say.
Well, thank you so much. Just to give you a thumbnail sketch of who I am and where I came from, I started my professional career in the insurance industry. And I spent many years in the insurance industry in middle management and in executive management. And then from the insurance industry, I moved over into the credit union industry and worked in the credit union industry as a marketing director for a major credit union. and was in that capacity, then moved into financial services industry, then from there into the mortgage industry, and worked with a subprime mortgage lender. And prior to, and interspersed within all of that, I spent about 20 years as a business management consultant. So I was working with startup companies to mature companies. I would write business marketing and strategic plans. I would also go in and do business evaluations, determine if there was issues and how to solve those issues. So that's pretty much 20 years in the corporate world and 20 years in the business consulting world, and was born and raised in the Midwest and moved to California in 1985 and continued the career out here. And that's how I got to where Eagle Research Associates was actually formed.
Well, I'm looking through this book that you've written, Robbing You with a Keyboard Instead of a Gun, Cybercrime and How They Do It. And I see some things in this book as I'm looking through it that I have certainly been aware of, fortunately have not fallen prey to, but have been aware of, and been aware of friends or associates of mine that may have fallen prey to it. And it's amazing that these things can garner as much money from people as they do. And I'm just wondering, are people just that naive that they think they're going to make this quick buck and they're going to be set for life?
Unfortunately, yes. I think that was probably the biggest surprise that I got, having with the background that I've had in insurance and banking and financial services and mortgage, that I really thought most of us had a better understanding, a basic element understanding of investments. And what I found is we don't. And that was kind of the first eye-opener for me. And to be honest with you, I knew nothing about internet investment, Ponzi scams, fraud, cybercrime until 2004. And now it's been going on since the early 1990s. But it really has taken off in the 2000s. That's when it really started to grow, and it really started to explode in about 2005, 2006, into how big it's become today. And so that was an eye-opener for me, because having been around it, you know, you tend to get, when you're doing something, you tend to think everybody else understands it the same way you do, and unfortunately that's not the case. But I think there's a couple problems. We're inherently trustworthy people. And if certain people that we have respect for and been taught to respect come along and tell us about something, we just automatically accept that, and we don't really do any due diligence, or we don't really look into it. We don't do the checking that we need to do in order to make sure that what they're talking about is real versus what is not real. And it's nothing more than going to steal your money. So that was a real shock to me. And like I said, it was an eye-opener. But once I got into it, I researched from 2004 to the end of 2007, before I ever formed Eagle, because we really wanted to get a handle on what was going on in this, I hate to say the word industry, but basically that's what it is, and really get a grip for how it works, who's involved, how do they do it, and how are they being able to steal millions and millions of dollars, and believe me, they're stealing, collectively, they're stealing billions of dollars, and that's the part that's really scary.
Well, let's talk about some of the, maybe the more recognizable ones. I have probably seen all kinds of emails, almost countless, come across my email site about send money to Nigeria. I'm a prince from Nigeria, and I have oil money, and my that was left to me, and it's going to have to be kept under the table and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, I just dismiss them and blow them off. But how in the world would they get somebody to actually do that? What is the actual function of that? How does it function when you see that email?
Well, what you have to understand is, with them, this is a numbers game. The first thing you want to look at is that they contact, you know, in the contact information, they tell you that they got your name from so-and-so or some organization or some situation.
Right, or you won a lottery drawing.
Right. Now, what you want to do is, first of all, is you look at the to line to see, okay, if they know who I am and they know my email address, because obviously they sent it to me, my email address should be in that to line. And you look up at the to line and it's either blank, it says none, or undisclosed recipient, or every once in a while they might get your email address in there. It's rare that they do. But again, remember, they know your name. But immediately they start out with everything but your name. They always start out, dear beloved, if they're trying to get you, that's a poor dying widow and she needs to get her money out. She wants to use it for charitable giving. Or if you won a lottery, you know, whatever they claim, they never reference your name ever, ever, ever in it. Now, the only way they'll reference your name is if you respond and send them back information they're requesting. And now from that point forward, they're going to address you by name. But there's little tricks of the trade that we tell people, and most people are smart enough to know, do not fall for these type of emails. Unfortunately, I said it's a numbers game. They will send out 7 million to 10 million of these emails in bulk. And they know that they only have to have 1% of the people respond. And they now have a live fish on the line, and they will convince you what they're doing is legal. But what is really fascinating, if you sit down and really read the email, they're asking you to do about and commit about 5 felonies. And that's just from the standpoint that you're going to help them spirit money out of a country. You know, they're saying they got to keep it under the radar. They don't want the money going to the bank. Well, there's a felony right there. Then they're asking you to accept money. That's wire fraud, bank fraud. That's 2 more felonies we toss into the mix. And it builds from there. But they tell you everything is legal, but what they're asking you to do is commit 5 to 6 felonies on every one of these type of emails. And that's the ones where they're asking you to help you get money out of the country. Now, lottery is a different story. That one, they're just telling you they want your money. They're going to tell you you have to send them money to get your money. And the simple thing we tell people is if you did not enter a lottery and you didn't buy a ticket, you can't win. And if you did buy a ticket, you don't have to pay to get your money. Your email cannot win you a lottery. It's just it just doesn't happen. But they make you think it does. And we have an element, as I said, the element of trust is we want to believe people. We want to believe, we want to trust, and they prey on that vulnerability. And they especially prey on that vulnerability extremely with elderly seniors. And those there tends to be the ones that usually fall for this.
There's something that I receive also that is, it comes with regard to our credit card processing account. Because for the things that we do, we take credit cards. And they will say, dear member, due to whatever, you're going to have to re-register your credit card information. And it's just bogus. And so then you just don't click on it. Even if you click on it, I think you're opening them up somehow to getting some kind of information. But the credit card processing company tells us just send it off to spoof@whatever.com, and they supposedly try to take care of it. And there are certain ways, of course, that they will address you that is legitimate if there was a legitimate problem. But they're not going to call you member for one.
No, they never do.
And so it's interesting because they have all the logos, they have all the jargon, they have all the stuff that makes it look very official.
Absolutely. I got to tell you a story, and you're going to love this one. Now, I think we can all agree that the FBI director is an intelligent individual, and he's astute. He's sharp. There is an email goes around, and it started out, and it's called bank phishing email. And your bank sends you an email, and it says, quote, there's been a security breach or unusual activity on your account. You need to contact our security department immediately to get this taken care of, because until you do, your account is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give you, they're very gracious, they give you a link in your email for you to click on to sign into your online banking and solve this problem. Now, I'm talking about the FBI director here, folks. He clicked on that link. And he probably came within 2 clicks of having his entire bank account, savings account, not only deleted, meaning they stole his money, but having all of his personal information that they needed on him that they didn't have already. And, oh, by the way, while he was on there doing that, they were already, if you give them your login and your password, they're already in your account. And what they're doing is changing your password, number one, and changing your email address, number two. And the reason they do that is simply this. Because if they can get you inside and get totally inside your banking and get access to your account, you will get a notice that you did online banking. And they don't want that email coming to you because they know that it's going to give them away. So what they're going to do is they're going to change your email address so you can't get any notifications that they just went in and while you were on the thinking you were in the banking and answering security questions, they were just wiping out your bank account. And so they don't want you getting an email possibly during the period of time they're talking to you about and they're you're doing this through the online banking, but you're at the security answering security questions. They don't want you knowing that they just took deposited, transferred money out of your checking account over to somebody else or, you know, savings account over to somebody else. So they first thing they do is they change email address. Second thing they do is they change the password so you can't get back into your online banking when you're done. And he literally came within two clicks. And he admitted this at a bar association meeting that he was attending. And my point simply is, the reason I'm telling that story is simply this. If we think we're too smart to fall for one of these things, we're not. We can become a victim of this stuff. Some of these, understand, folks, these people are getting really good at what they do, and they know how to steal your money. And they will convince you without any hesitation or question that what you're doing is correct. And the first thing you want to do is if you ever get one of these emails, has one of those embedded URLs in it, if you're on a Mac, you put your cursor over it, it's going to pop up on the screen and show you the URL that you're really going to. If you're on a PC, it's going to be down in the lower left-hand corner, close to where your start button is. It'll tell you the URL. And if it's from Bank of America, it'll say www.bankofamerica.com. What you will see is www.thqrplqst003.47892.com. And over way over on the right-hand side, you might see Bank of America, if you're lucky. And it makes no difference because they know they're going to send out so many emails with Bank of America, they're going to send out so many emails with Chase, they're going to send out so many with Wells Fargo, they're going to send out whatever the bank is in the region they're going after, they're going to put that information there. And if you're not a Chase account holder, you just delete it because it doesn't apply to you. If it's Wells Fargo, you delete it. You just think, well, they got something wrong. But if it's your bank, you're going to click on it. Now, first of all, you open up the email account, you're really not in trouble. It's only when you click on the link that you're in trouble. But here's what happens. They know what is the real email address at that time. Please understand, when they send out these bulk emails, they don't know for sure whether or not it still is an active working email. The moment you open it and you respond, they know now it's a real email account, it's live, and you're now on 100 to 200 different email lists for these scammers. This is how you get all this spam into your inbox on your email accounts. So that's particularly how that particular scam works.
So I may have opened up one of them inadvertently, although I don't know of anybody that's done anything as far as getting into my accounts.
Oh, no. If you just open it, you're not at risk. It's when you click on the URL that's in that email or you respond by email, that's when they know they have a live email address. Up until that time, they buy these lists. And they turn around and then they'll sell that list because now they've got confirmation. They can make as much money off you selling your email address as they can sometimes of stealing money out of your checking account.
Sure.
I don't say that lightly. I'm just saying they make money off of you two ways. One, they steal your money, and two, they sell your identity, your email identity, to hundreds of other people, and they're going to make tons of money off of it.
I just received an email just the other day. As a matter of fact, while we're talking here, I'm going to look it up because I'm going to pull it up on my computer. It was an email that was sent to me by somebody saying that they wanted to find out the pricing of ads on one of our websites. And I'm thinking, where did this come from? I mean, I had this somewhat of an uneasiness about it. The guy's name is Samuel Charles, and he's from Garachi, G-U-R-A-C-I, .com, and he claims to be, he represents Garachi Agency, which is an advertising agency for the Lacoste company out of France. And I'm thinking, he says he wants to put banner advertising on one of our websites. Well, which is fine with me. I mean, I gladly sell banner advertising on our website. That's not a problem. But now they've got me. He's got me wondering, you know. And I did respond to him, and I said, well, send me information about what your advertising, what goods or services, and what size, what size you're looking to put up and so on and so forth, so I could try to pin him down a little bit more. And he also sends me something that I do have a website for him. And it's all written in French.
Yeah.
But I'm of an opinion that this, I think that this might be legitimate.
Well, usually you can do it a couple ways. He's given you an email address, and the biggest thing you want to look at is the email address at the company in which he claims he's representing. If he's saying, and there's some salespeople that do this, so it doesn't mean this happens in every case. But usually if you work, for example, if you were sending out an email to somebody, would you use gmail.com or would you use the name of your organization, at yourorganization.com or .net or whatever it would be? Mm-hmm. And we've tell people, look, if somebody's contacting you in official capacity from a company they represent, the company has their own email addresses. Now, the only way that varies, if they're an independent contractor, they could have their own specific email address, and sometimes they'll use Gmail because they don't want to pay for a dedicated line because they can access it anywhere in the world better than they can sometimes a dedicated email address. Even though you can go to webmail and usually get in, you know, again, it depends on the situation, but the biggest thing is you check out the company and make sure who they say they are. Usually if you go to their company website, even if it's in French, they usually have ability to translate it and you can get it in English. If not, you find somebody that can speak French, and or you just Google them and you can look them up and say, this is their address. And a lot of times they'll give you a list of their, you know, their people that are in their organization, and you look and see if that person is there.
That's exactly what I did. I did indeed Google them, and I did get the translated website, and this gentleman's name is at thecompanyname.com. So
that's encouraging right there, because it says he is part of that organization, and they don't give those email addresses out. And if they did, it would automatically go to the company, and it would tell you if he really doesn't work there and he just put it in to see if it would go, it'll come back. It'll bounce back and say no such email exists, because the company has a roster list of all their email accounts that they've set up. So the fact that it went through, it didn't come back to you as bounced, that tells you pretty much in fact that he was using their company name in the email address. That tells you pretty much right there that he's legitimate.
Yeah, I just replied to the one and it came back, and he sent me another email back that said this is what we're looking for specifically, and so I think it may be well worth it. I might be able to make $5 on this thing.
Wow. Gosh, do I get a cut?
What's your percentage? What's your percentage?
Oh, I work cheap. We'll talk later.
There you go. Well, how many different scams and cyber scams do you think there are right now in your estimation or guesstimation, however you do it, that are out there that people are prey to?
Probably somewhere between 10 and 12,000.
Wow. And some of
and
them,
that's just the ones we know of.
And they're all at varying degree of complexity and all at varying degree of how good they look as far as what they might look like they are a real opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. And they vary by different – there's two different types of what is out on the Internet. One of them is called HYIP, which stands for High Yield Investment Program, and the other one is what is called, obviously, non-HYIP or non-High Yield Investment Program. And the difference is the type of vehicle that they're using. If you're talking high yield, we're always looking at something that is like forex trading, commodities, programs along those lines, sports arbitrage betting. Those are the type of things that fall into the high yield investment category. If you're looking into non-high yield, we're talking insurance products, we're talking about prime banknotes, we're talking, and these are all scams, by the way. Everything I'm talking about is all scams. They're talking about viatical insurance programs. Those are the type of things that fall, because they're not what we call the exotics. And the exotics are always the high yield, and, of course, they always claim they're not high risk, and any high yield program is high risk. That's why they call it high yield. There are no such things as legitimate HYIPs or high yield investment programs. There are legitimate high yield investments, and that's the difference between the two terminologies. And, yes, there's insurance products. And, yes, there are banknotes that can be traded. But there is no such animal as a prime bank note. They prey on class warfare. They prey on Christians. They prey on Jews. They prey on target specific target markets, what we call affinity fraud. There are specific products that are designed to go after certain groups, and they will target those groups. For example, here in Southern California, we had a major Ponzi that was going on, and their whole target was illegals. And the reason why they targeted illegals is because they know they would never go to the authorities. And they probably stole $200, $300 million.
Wow.
This is how big it gets. It's not so much how much each person loses. It's collectively how many people do they reach and what is the total volume. To put this in perspective for you, and I get this all the time when I do seminars, and we go out and we do public seminars and speaking engagements, so if anybody's interested, they can contact me. But when I go out and I explain to people, I said, the first question I get is usually this: well, if this thing is so big, why haven't I heard about it? Because I tell them how big it is. And the last 3 years, over $300 billion was stolen right here in the U.S., and I said $300 billion. Worldwide, it was over $500 billion. It's probably 40% underreported. But the reason why you haven't heard about it is if you just lost your life savings, and think about this for a moment, if you just lost your life savings to an investment scam, do you really think when you get together with the family on Thanksgiving, you're going to bring it up and talk about it?
No, yeah, I'm going to the mountaintop and shout that out.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to go tell your best friends. And you get out, go out to dinner with a bunch of friends, say, well, you're not going to believe what happened to me. I just lost my life savings, you know, to a Ponzi, and make a joke of it. No, you're embarrassed. Your ego gets in the way, and people won't report it. And this is what we try to tell people. Silence is a con man's best friend, because if more people told about their losses, more people become aware of it. That's why we emphasize education so strongly, because we know if we can educate the public, eventually people will stop falling for this stuff.
That's an interesting point you made about silence, because the converse is true. I know of a scam, a pyramid scam that was running in Southern California 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago. I think it was called an airplane ride or something. And you bought a seat on the airplane, and there was the pilot, and there was that was one, and then there's a layer of two, then a layer of four.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
A layer of eight, and I think then maybe a layer of 16. I don't remember. But the objective was to bring them in at the bottom layer, and then they start working up, and then it splits, and it works up, and it splits, and it works up, and it splits. And there were some people that made some really big money on that thing. I mean, I have some acquaintances in Southern California that made $16,000, $32,000 cash money until all of a sudden the thing started to crash and started to crumble. And this was all over San Diego County. And before you know it, the Attorney General's office is on the radio making say this, you know, and he got on this on these talk shows, and people were calling in and saying, well, it's a gift, it's this, it's that. And the
right.
Attorney General says, no, 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 it's not, it's not. And believe me, if we ever catch you or your friends or whoever's doing it, you will all be made to pay one way or another. And before you know it, the whole thing everybody starts thinking the other guy's his guy standing next to him is a spy for the
oh, yeah.
General's office. Now all of a sudden everybody's, you know, suspecting everybody, and the whole thing falls of its own weight, and there's a lot of people that lost thousands of dollars.
Well, let me explain to the audience, and so you understand this. In every one of these Ponzi's, approximately 12 to 15% of the people are going to make money, and the vast majority of the balance of it, the 85 to 88% are going to lose their shirt. They're going to lose everything. There's always people that obviously they wouldn't run these things, and they wouldn't get these things, wouldn't get in traction unless somebody was getting paid. And that's how they rope you in. Oh, they've been paying for X number of years. And, you know, this is a great program. I'm in it. They start showing checks, and they flash money around. They do this on YouTube now. It's a way to get people to join up under them. But the bottom line is, yeah, there's a select few that are going to make some money, and they're always the first ones in. They're the first ones out, by the way. A lot of these people put money in initially. They get their initial investment back plus a huge percentage because they're what we call priming the pump. And secondly is, as soon as they get that, they get out. They don't have any money invested. All they have invested is how many they get referral fees, and the only thing that they're going to lose is their referral fees. if you think that somebody got in early on this that's really promoting this thing is still in it when you're getting in it, they've been out of it for so long, it's pathetic. They don't tell you that because they knew if they did, you wouldn't join. But what I'm saying is they don't have a lot of money at risk. The only thing they've got at risk is whatever their referral commissions are. And that if it goes down, they don't care because they've already got all their money in, they got a nice return off of it, they're out of it, and all they're doing is saying, okay, I'll move on to my next Ponzi. And we have people that move from Ponzi to Ponzi to Ponzi. We know because we see them in every one. And so we've been working with law enforcement, and hopefully now they're going to start going after the promoters of these things as well as the people who are running them and start making them pay a hefty price for it. And hopefully that means a prison time, as well as having to give back all the money. So, and the thing that people have to understand is that in any Ponzi, if the government goes in and shuts it down, they have a right to do what is called clawback. And that means that if you come up on the list and you made $30,000, the government has a right to come to you and ask for that $30,000 back. And they will.
Even if you went out and bought a new car with it.
Even if you went out and bought a new car. You're responsible for it because you were involved in an illegal enterprise and what you received was illegal. Illegal. It was illegal funds. It'd be like, if you got a knock on the door and there's this kid standing there and he's saying, hey, I work for XYZ company. We ordered these, VCRs or whatever. You name the product. And we got more of them. We know what to do with. They made a mistake on the order. And, hey, I've got this thing, and normally it's $129, and I'm selling it for $29.95. We just got to get rid of them. And you buy it. And about 5 days later, there's a knock on the door, and it's a police officer. Did you buy an XYZ? Yes, I did. Okay, give it to me. You got to give it back to him because it's stolen property. And it was you should have known that you can't get $129, whatever it is, for $29.95. So the first time, no problem. But if you do it the second, third, fourth, and fifth time, and they keep coming knocking on your door, there's going to come a time they're going to knock on the door, they're going to put you in handcuffs, and they're going to call you off. Because when they cart you off, you now have become part of the syndicate. You are an accomplice now. You're no longer a victim. And at some point in time, the victimology goes away, and the accessibility and being an accessory takes over. And when we see these same people going from scam to scam to scam or Ponzi to Ponzi to Ponzi, and there's a difference between the two words, and I'll explain that in just a minute, they know what they're doing. This is not a fluke. They can tell you it's legitimate till they're blue in the face, but there's ways you know that they're not legitimate. But the difference between a Ponzi and a scam is this. A Ponzi, it pays people to get more people in. A scam is always a payment that is going to be promised for a future event happening, and the future event never happens. And the scams come into play in a lot of the insurance type of programs that they're out there offering because the event has to take place, the event never takes place, and so nobody gets paid except for the people that were running it and the people they got out there to promote it. Now, they get paid, but I'm talking about the people that are participating. If you join into an investment Ponzi program or some kind of a trading program and you're getting some payment out of it, that's what makes it a Ponzi. But that's the difference between a Ponzi and a scam, and I hope that's clear to everybody.
I cannot – I want to step back just a minute from the previous thing you were talking about. I cannot tell you how many times when – particularly when I lived in Southern California, that I would see somebody sitting at a gas station with a rider truck with a roll-up gate, a roll-up door in the back, and selling stereo equipment off the back of his truck.
Oh, yeah.
And it was always around the holidays, always around the holidays. And other times of year, I would see people with that same type of truck selling tires and rims out of the back of the truck.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed to be the two things that I saw most when I was out and about was either stereo equipment and tires and rims. And you just know that you're sitting there buying stolen property that's sitting right there. And they're doing
Well, you should know.
And they're sitting there right in the middle of a big super pump station with all the pumps and everything and people coming in and out. And they got their truck right there. They may as well put a banner on the side that says tires, discount tire or something, you know?
Exactly.
But there are people sitting there, and I just would shake my head and I go, "What is wrong with you?" I mean,
it makes you wonder. You want me to really shock you and your audience?
Sure.
You see, when we first got in this, Well, we first got into this, and like I said, I started researching this in 2004. I formed Eagle in 2008. Usually the people we found running these things were the typical con person. I mean, we just, you know, it wasn't anybody that, you know, that really we were shocked at. And to be honest with you, I thought since I've been around this since 2004, I could never be shocked. Well, never say never, because I got shocked, because lately, and I'm talking within the last year to year and a half, the people that we have found running these Ponzi's were attorneys, CPAs, financial planners, pastors, rabbis, deacons, elders, bishops, and we even had a conservative talk show radio host got caught up one of these out of Minnesota. And there even was a chiropractor and an architect that were running one. And when I talk about, they're not innocent victims that got duped and didn't know what they were doing. They were running them. There was a pastor and his sons out of southern Indiana stole $120 million from the congregation of four or five churches, claiming they were building churches. Only thing they were building is were their own mansions. Well, we had a bishop out of St. Louis who was running a $50 million-plus real estate investment scam out of England, of all places. And I mean, and the list goes on and on. And that, to be honest with you, because these are people we were taught to trust.
Right.
And what I try to tell everybody when we go out and we do seminars, we tell everybody, say, look, we're not telling you not to trust. What we're telling you to do is verify first, then trust. We're doing it backwards. We trust, and then later on we go, well, you know, maybe I should check this out. No, you verify up front. And it's real simple, folks. If it's that good of an investment and it's real, it'll still be there 2 months, 6 months, 9 months. You know, it makes no difference the timeline. It'll still be there, and it'll still be just as good to join then as it is right now. But you've got to really, truly check it out, and you've got to verify stuff. And we talk about it on our website. We call what we call due diligence. We talk about red flag warnings. We point out these things that people need to be aware of, and you just do a little bit of research, and you're going to find out a ton of information. And it'll save you a lot of heartache and a lot of financial disaster, because you're not going to lose your life savings to these scammers. And they always start out small and get you to go big. Excuse me, they get you to go bigger because they know that you're hooked. You're going to continue to put money in.
Sure, Lynn. You mentioned it, so this is a good time. Why don't you? And we'll do it again before we end the show. But why don't you go ahead and give us that website information and places that you have already supplied people locations that they can go and learn a little bit more about what we're talking about today.
Okay, our website is www.eagleresearchassociates.org.
EagleResearchAssociates.org.
Correct.
Okay, very good. You said you had some red flags on your site and a few other things also. What are some of those red flags? Can you let us know a few of those?
Sure. One of the largest red flags we have about when you're investing with a company, there are certain requirements that they have to comply with. First of all, you'd like to know they have a physical address, they have an actual, and that it's a real physical address, that they have a telephone number, they have a customer support 800 number, or if not an 800 number, but at least they have a customer support, and it's verifiable that that really is a phone number that belongs to them. Usually what you'll find is if you go online and look at any of the investment Ponzi's that are out there, you will never see a physical address for them anywhere on their website. You will, and if you have a phone number, it could also be a cell number that is a toss-away cell that's being forwarded to another number, to another number, and to another number. You have to constantly check that to make sure these things are real. But the major red flags are this. If your sole contact is so-and-so at gmail.com, not the company name, that's a major red flag. If they don't have a physical address and they say, well, we're in cyberspace, we don't need to have a physical address, we're around the world, it's a major red flag. If you're offering investments to just one U.S. citizen, I don't care where the company says it's domiciled, it has to be registered and licensed with the SEC. We tell you to go to the SEC. If they say they don't have to be registered with the SEC, that is a red flag. If they're trading in commodities, they have to be registered with the CFTC, and that just stands for the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. The person who's offering and selling these securities online has to be registered. If they are selling investments, they have to be registered and licensed with the SEC, with FINRA. And if they're not, that's a red flag. If they're trading commodities, hedge funds, et cetera, that falls under the CFTC, that falls under the NFA. So they have to be registered and licensed with the NFA. If they're not, it is a major red flag. If they're offering insurance products, they must be licensed and registered to sell insurance in every state in the United States in which this organization is offering to do business. If they're not, it's a red flag. Every company out there that sells securities has a broker ID number. If it's not visible on their website, it is a red flag. If they claim they're registered, and a lot of them are currently doing this, they're registering with Companies House in UK. Now, to be a registered company, it's the same thing as you went to your Secretary of State and filed out a registration form and said, I want to register this company. The fact that you register with the Secretary of State does not make you legal from the standpoint of what you're planning to do. It just makes you legally registered in the state, but it doesn't mean that you're actually doing the business that you claim you registered for. It's just a registration process. It's the same thing with Companies House. So if you're offering securities out of London or out of the UK, not only do you have to be licensed with Companies House as a company, you also have to be licensed with FSA. That is their regulatory body, the same as our SEC or Securities and Exchange Commission. That's who it is in the UK. And if they're not licensed and registered with them, they're not legal. So those are red flags. Those are the type of red flags that we're talking about. And it's just using some common sense and sitting back and saying, well, if they do this, okay. They're not doing that. Maybe I should check a little bit more. It's designed to say, if you saw somebody waving a red flag, what do? You stop. You want to find out what's going on and see if it's okay to proceed. That's what these things are identified. These are just markers that tell you there's something major wrong here that you need to go check further. Now, you may check further and they get all those issues get resolved. It's rare that it happens on the internet, trust me. And from that standpoint. But what I'm saying is you can verify whether they're real or not. You just got to do, and that's where we get into going from red flags. That takes us over into due diligence, which just says, I'm going to go check all this stuff out and see if I can get the answers to match up and satisfy me that it's a legitimate company. So when you're doing the research, you're really doing your due diligence. And a lot of times people get hung up on that word due diligence. They think it has to be, it's really, complicated. It's not complicated. It's just simple. What would I do? I mean, if you're going to go buy a car, do you just walk into the dealership and say, I like that car, I want to buy it? You pretty much have researched on the internet all the different cars that are out there, what you like about them, what you don't like about them. You're reading reviews. We do more research for buying a car and a washing machine and a TV set than we ever do for our investments. And what I'm telling people to do the same thing you do for everything else that you're doing. Just do it when you're doing investments. It's more important to you because it's your life savings.
These are
just little tricks of the trade that we try to, we put up there on the website. It's helping people understand what they need to look for and how they can do due diligence, and it's real simple. It's not complicated. And if they don't know what to do, they're not sure, all they have to do is contact us. We'll gladly help them.
What is it that makes, in particular, seniors more vulnerable?
I think there's a couple of factors. Number one, we got to identify why do they attach seniors. Well, first of all, that's where the money is. Let's get real. They worked all their lives. They've saved a lot of money, and the bulk of the wealth in the U.S. is in seniors. That's where the primary, probably if you looked at it, we've got billionaires that are young and we've got all these other stuff, but the primary wealth is combined in the senior market. But when you go after the senior market, you're also getting two others for the price of one, because we know that out of all seniors, that 85 to 90% of seniors are either two groups, Christian or Jews. So now you have the three biggest target markets in one entity, senior citizens. So that's why they target them. But why do they fall for it? Because we've been taught to trust our professionals. We've been taught to trust people that are referred to us by our friends and our family members. And what they do is probably the bulk of people that get involved in this stuff are really truly because of a friend got into something, and a classic example of that is Bernie Madoff, the way he got all his clients was through the people that got in and their friends. And
right.
That's the way Bernie escalated his amount of money that he was able to steal from the Jewish community. Not only that, but who he was. But they also give you, they make you believe that the person who's offering the security has all this knowledge and intelligence, and they're, you know, they've done it for years. It's a confidence thing. They get them comfortable with them. They prey on the fact that they know that they can make them sound good, because we know what's happening. We've seen 401ks become 101ks in many cases. We've seen medical costs rise. We've seen expenses going up. Let me look at gas. And when people start getting a little leery about their normal investments and are not getting the returns they need to be able to maintain their lifestyle, they're willing to take on a little more risk, even though they know there might be something maybe a little shady about it, but, hey, I need to get a supplement to my income. Now, the thing that they do is, remember, they always tell you this high-risk investment is no risk. It's, you know, they always tell you the principal's guaranteed. They're lying. They're telling you that there's no risk associated with this high rate of return. They're lying. But because we're desperate, because we are living in fear, a lot of us, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So they play on desperation. They prey on fear. They prey on the fact that people have had their retirement incomes reduced because of all the things that happened in the stock market and all the other investment portfolio they've got. Their CDs aren't paying anything anymore because, I mean, my gosh, you know, if you're lucky to get 3% a year, and they've been used to getting 9 to 10% a year. When you have that kind of in spending power taken away from you, you're always looking for alternative investments. And you're willing to do some things that you might normally not would have done if you'd have just stopped and thought about it. So it's a combination of things. It's not just one particular thing, but there are some out there that prey on the elderly that are going to die. And we just had one here in Orange County, $14 plus $5 million, had 127 victims, and before they ever got him to trial, I think 80-some of those victims had died. By the time they got the trial over, it took 2 years for the trial, another 30 or 40 had died. Out of the 127, there was only 4 or 5 that are still living. And he wiped out their entire life savings and had no remorse for it whatsoever. I mean, I'll be honest with you, that just defies my understanding. I don't know how somebody can do that to that type of person, but he did. And he's only in his 50s. Fortunately, he got 90 years. And I think he's going to be away for a long time. He'll die in prison, where he should. But my point is simply this. It's easy to get caught up in this stuff because a lot of times we're hearing it from friends and family members that are telling us about something, and we don't want to be left out. We want to get on the gravy train too, because boy, if Uncle Fred's in this, I want to be able to keep up with Uncle Fred. I can't let him get ahead of me with my investments. So you're going to jump in.
Well, I think along the way, Len, I think some of this stuff is actually taking place, and on some level, although it may be legal, but it's, I guess you could almost call it a legal scam, and that's me saying that. Is that these subprime mortgages and default swaps and whatever that was going on that made a lot of people a lot of money, and other people are now left out in the cold and they can't afford this and they can't afford that, and they're losing their backside to left and right. Those are almost like a legal scam, I would think.
Well, in essence, you're right. They were. That would be a whole two-hour conversation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely it would be. It definitely
but
would
my bottom
be,
line
yeah.
is this. Again, it's, you know, I worked in the subprime mortgage industry, so I know well what goes on within the side, but you have to understand
there
were government mandates that we had to make X, Y percentage of loans whether we wanted to make them or not. We didn't have a choice because the fines were going to be greater than what we would have lost if we wrote the subprime loan. There were jokes about the liar's loan. You didn't have to have any income verification. You could put whatever you wanted to put down on a sheet of paper, and whatever it was, you had to accept it. Now, that's a license to steal right there.
Yes,
and then you had, and then we go from there, and we threw all the other layers on and how they bundled those and how they sold them out as investments when they were really nothing more than just crap. There was no underlying security there whatsoever. And, of course, we had the housing bubble, and as the housing prices kept going up and up and up, the amount of money that was able to be turned was even greater. And then, of course, the bubble burst, and now people are upside down in their houses, And there was a study done just released here in California that 100,000 people owe more on their houses than what they are worth. And that was just in one county.
Wow. Wow.
It's a whole different realm than what we deal in. But yes, I'm familiar with it. And I know how a lot of that was played. But and this is the thing, and of course, one of the things that everybody will do, and you have to understand another thing they do and how they convince people in, they make you think that what you're investing in here is no different than Social Security, because they'll claim Social Security's a Ponzi. And they'll claim other things are Ponzi's. So it's always, if we were doing anything wrong, the one I love is, if we were doing anything wrong, law enforcement would always come in and shut us down. And I'm like, unfortunately, law enforcement's so overwhelmed, they're still trying to play catch-up. You know, not only did they open the barn door and let all the horses out, now they're going out and trying to get the horses, but the horses have had horses, and the horses have had horses, and now all of a sudden, instead of just, 20 horses, we got 100,000 horses. And you can't get them all back in the barn overnight. And that's one of the reasons why it formed Eagle, was because we found that 1,800 FBI white-collar crime investigators were moved out of FBI white-collar crime and moved over to Homeland Security, and not one of them was replaced. When that announcement came out in 2006, the Internet exploded with Internet investment scams. There is no coincidence of that. It was designed because they knew they could almost act with impunity. One of the reasons why I formed it, Eagle, was number one, to educate the public, and two, was to come alongside and help law enforcement, because I knew they were woefully, inadequately understaffed. They were overworked. They're like every other agency. And one of the frustrations we've had is Congress hasn't passed a budget in 3 years. And the only thing the agencies have been able to do is maintain treading water. They can only cover their ongoing expenses that they had, because all we do is get continuing resolutions. So they don't have money that they put into their budgets to do the type of research and the type of investigation that has to be done to put a stop to this stuff. And if Congress would pass a budget, there's a chance that those dollars could now be put together, that they could actually start really playing catch up. In the meantime, we fill that gap and we fill that role. And we're glad to do it. We've been able to shut down over 28 of these illegal investment programs. We could do a lot more, but we're only limited by how much money that the public supports us with their donations. And one of the things, I'll make it very clear, people say, if you're working with the federal government, you're working with all these agencies, why don't they pay you? Simple solution is, there is no budget. Now, if there was a budget, do I believe they're going to pay us, millions of dollars? No. Any amount that they could send to us would help with what we do and the assistance we provided them. But the bulk of our support really has to come from the public, because that's who we're trying to protect. We're trying to protect the public. And that's why I do as many speaking engagements as I can. It's why I do as many interviews on the radio and TV that I can, is to get people aware this is a huge financial catastrophic disaster. And I'll be honest with you, it's part of why we're having such a hard time recovering from this downturn in our economy. We have lost hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars out of this country that will never come back in this country. It's hard to make up that kind of loss.
And that's not even to mention the stuff that we've lost out of this country that was lost legitimately.
Oh, absolutely.
Lost, but I mean, it's gone out of this country legitimately for goods and services and everything else, and balance of trade and all the rest of those things that you hear on the news all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing that people have to understand is, it's not just online. There's hundreds of millions of dollars being sold by offline. They're doing this offline as well as online. You understand, the Ponzi industry didn't start online. It started dog and pony show. And what we mean by that is,
right,
they invite you to a hotel, and they do their pitch, and they get you to invest in whatever they say they're investing. So we have online and offline, and in the state of Florida, it is without a doubt the number one state in the United States with the highest degree of losses to investment Ponzi scams and fraud of any state in the union. Why? Heavily concentrated senior citizens, heavily concentrated Christians and Jews in state of Florida. And I repeat that three times, because you have to understand, folks, it's three dimensions to this target. They target Christians and they target Jews, but they know that those Christians and Jews, the majority of them, are senior citizens. You can't talk about one without talking about the other two. And that's the thing. Why? I mean, it's incredible. There was over $8 billion stolen that they've uncovered that they shut down in the state of Florida that had nothing to do with online investing. This was offline. One of them was attorney. $1.2 billion. And it's climbing. They're going to find out that it's probably going to max out at about $1.5, maybe $1.8 billion that he stole in Florida from senior citizens.
Well, I'm going to suggest that the watchword is a watchword that has been around for a long, long time. And people, I don't know if they've forgotten it or if they've just decided not to heed it. And that is, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Absolutely. We warn people about that all the time. I want to touch on two things that are happening offline that is really critical for people in the senior citizen community to understand. There is a scam going around by telephone. And what happens is they call you and they tell you that as a senior citizen, you are authorized to receive a grant of $25,000 from the federal government as part of the stimulus program to help seniors cover their medical expenses and their utility costs because they're all rising. And this is a program that was done in the stimulus. Your only qualifier to apply and be approved for this grant is you have to send $350 or $250. The dollar amount changes from phone call to phone call. But again, they're going to hit you with either $250 and go up from there. That you give a donation to a charitable organization, they give you graciously the name of the charity you have to send your money to. And here's the red flag. You're wiring at Western Union. Now, if you're wiring at Western Union, you can't trace the money. It's gone. Forget it. It's over. No matter, even if they caught the guys, there's nothing they can do to get the money back because they've already spent it, folks. There is no such program. That in itself should be the red flag. But because they're so convincing, they make you believe that it really is a real program because they throw all the words in, the stimulus package. It's designed for seniors. It's to help you with your increased medical expenses, your increased utility costs, all things that are real. It's just that the charity is bogus. It doesn't exist. They'll give you an address of where they're located. It is a real physical address for an agency of the federal government. So if you Google it, it will come up and say that's their address. The problem is the telephone number they give you is not the real number. And then when you call back to tell them that you've wired the money and you sent it to the place where they sent it to, they thank you and tell you your grant is on its way and you'll never, ever hear from them again. That's one of them. The second one that people have to be really careful with in the senior community, and this is on the rise and it's becoming an epidemic, and it's medical identity theft. And that is something you don't want to play with because it can affect your life. It can affect your being able to get treatment for a real illness you have because somebody has stolen your medical identity and has become you. And they could be getting prescriptions and getting treated and getting surgeries and stuff done under your name with your ID that you are not doing. And here's the problem. When you go to have a surgery, they come back and say, you've exhausted all your medical benefits. You're not entitled to any. Here's, what are you talking about? I didn't have that surgery. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Now, here's the kicker. All the laws that we put in place to protect your medical information now come back and bite you when you're trying to get your medical identity back because the same regulations that supposedly protect your identity are keeping you from being able to prove that you are you. And this is a huge thing that's happening, and they're doing it in several different ways, and there's a scam within a scam that operates within even that arena. And so that's why I wanted to, you know, let the seniors know. There's simple ways to do this. You constantly check your doctor's office to make sure that any service, you get a bill for something, you don't know what it is, you contact them immediately and say, what is this for? You ask for your records. You're entitled to have a copy of your medical records. Make sure there's no surgeries or anything in there that is showing up that you didn't have done in some location you've never been to. Understand, they're not going to do it in your locality. They're going to steal your identity and go someplace else and be you. And so there's a lot more, and we're going to put more information about this up on our website because it's becoming such a big issue, and we're seeing more and more of it. And so we're out there warning people. That's why I love to go out and do speaking engagements because I can reach so many people at one time. But, again, we're going to be having a lot of this information up on our website. We want you going there to get educated, and we have resources to other groups that do some of the same things that we do that provide education about these different type of Ponzi's and scams. The only reason why we're different than them is we're the only ones that work with law enforcement to help put the bad people away. And we have women doing this as well as men. So it's not just a gender thing. We have both genders actively involved in scamming you out of your money. And that's the things that we're trying to get at people educated. So I really want them to be warned that this is a danger. And there's another one that they invite you to a lunch. And no, we're not talking about buying gold bars. But what they're talking about is they're going to tell you to buy gold shares. And what they tell you is there is a new gold discovery down in Latin America, and they'll keep changing the name of the country in which it, where it's, the mine is located. And it's this huge mine, great huge find. And the stock is going to explode once they start exploring and they get all this, they start mining this gold. The price of the shares are going to go up. And of course, they're only selling for 3 to 5 cents a share. The problem is you've got to buy 100,000 shares to get in. It's all fake. There is no such gold mine. Yeah, the stock is really trading. It's what we call pink sheet trading. And the reason why it's called pink sheet trading is because these stocks are listed on paper that's printed in pink. And every brokerage house, if you went into a brokerage house and asked them about the pink sheet stocks, they would tell you immediately, oh, yeah, they exist. And they'd hand you the list of the pink sheet stocks. So remember, there's always an element of truth, and the rest of it's all a lie. And that stock may be listed on that pink sheet. What they didn't tell you was they reversed, they took a shell company that had stock that had been issued. They go in and they buy it, and they issue all these hundreds of thousands of shares, the owners do, and they're selling them to you, and they paid like 0.1% per share, and they're selling it to you for 5 cents a share. You don't think they made a ton of money?
Absolutely.
And then they'll bump up, they'll trade within themselves to drive the price up from 5 cents to like 12 cents or 15 cents, and then they're going to offer it at 22 cents, and then it's between 27 cents, and it just incrementally creeps up. It makes no difference whether you got in at 5 cents a share or you got in at 22 cents a share. The only way you make money is if you sold your shares at 5 cents for 22 cents. It doesn't work that way. It's a bid-sell type of arrangement. The bid may be 14 cents. The sell may be 22 cents. And you've got to play that spread. But even if you could get your money out and make a little bit of money when it all collapses, if the government comes in, they're going, as I said, they're going to do clawbacks, and you're going to have to give it back. It's all a shell game. And we just wanted to, I just wanted to get your listeners, because we know, you know, we're reaching the senior community, and I want you aware of what's out there. I'm a senior too, folks. It can happen to anybody. Do I have time for a personal story?
Yes, you do.
Okay. This happened to us, folks. Happened to us. Now, you know what I do. My wife put our rent check in the mail. The only difference was she put it in at 7 o'clock at night. And the mailman didn't come until 10:30 or 11:30, 12 o'clock the next day. And about 8 days later, we get a call from our leasing agent, and she goes, did you guys mail your check? We said, of course. She goes, well, it's just weird. I didn't get it. And I said, well, it probably got lost in the mail. Wasn't thinking because I didn't even realize my wife had, because usually my wife mails it from work, so we never have a problem. I get my bank statement, I open it up, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, I've never been to True Value. I didn't go shop at Lowe's. I sure didn't buy that kind of dollars worth of stuff at Lowe's. I didn't go to Rite Aid. And I open it up, and what happened was somebody had taken our envelope out of the mailbox. They took our routing number and our checking account number, printed up new checks, not fortunately not using our name, so we're not really concerned about identity theft. But they made up a fake name, address. They even put a driver's license number on it for just added kicks. And they went out to all these places, and they wrote these three checks. Now, had we not had money in the bank account, they would have bounced. They would have been immediately, we'd have had a notification immediately that there was something wrong. But because they processed until I got my bank statement, I didn't even know that these checks existed. So we had to contact the bank. We had closed the account, obviously. We had to open a new account. We filed a fraud report. We filed with, you know, we filed a police report. We contacted all the credit agencies, put a fraud alert on our account just in case. And we did all the things that we tell people they have to go do. But, folks, I talk about this in my seminars, and it's kind of ironic because I tell people they will come and take stuff out of your mailbox. This is one way they get your medical identity. They see that you're sending something to a doctor's office, they're going to take it out of your mailbox, steam it open, get your information, steam it back closed, and send it on to your doctor. This is how they do it. And you don't even know it's been done to you until later. Fortunately, and I say fortunately because it wasn't that long from the time that we found out that they didn't get the check and we got our bank statement. But it can happen to you. It happened to us. Now, needless to say, my wife knows, do not put anything in the mailbox overnight.
Well, that's one reason. Anything like that. I mean, we'll put Christmas cards to go out or something like that. But anything that's going out as far as payment wise or those types of things, we put them in the drop box at the post office. I mean,
right.
Just around,
well,
just
most, it's not a thing about it. Most people think, I put it in my mailbox. It's no big deal. You know, it's safe. It's secure. No, it's not.
Right.
And like I said, normally my wife would have never put it in the mailbox. She normally mailed it from work, but it just so happened that time it was a situation where the end of the month, the beginning of the month fell on a weekend, and so it was like, well, I'm not going to be at work. I'm going to go ahead, because we've got things we had to go do the next morning. I'm afraid I'll forget to put it in the mailbox, so I'll put it in the night before. I really honestly didn't know she had done it, and so consequently, you know, if I'd known she'd put it out there, I would have gone taken it out and brought it in and said, no, we'll put it out tomorrow morning. But I should have been, I mean, but here's the thing. I'm so involved in what I'm doing that when my leasing agent called and said, you know, we didn't get the check, other than thinking it lost in the mail, that should have been a red flag to me. And my whole point is this. Remember about the FBI director? If he can be fooled, I can be fooled. You can be fooled.
Absolutely.
It never once entered my mind that somebody took that envelope out of the mailbox and stole our banking information.
Right.
And I do this. It's how you get caught up in other things you don't think. You know, I'm so involved in tracking down other people that I forget about. I got to track down and watch myself. So it was a wake-up call for me. And that's the reason why I tell the story. And, it's embarrassing, yeah, but it's a good educational lesson. And, you know, people, it can happen to you. And it's just simple little things that you do. You don't even stop and think about. They can get to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Len, we're right down here to the short rows on our program today. I want to make sure that people are aware of the fact that you do speak to organizations and groups. I'm assuming they can get hold of you for that through your website. Is that
That's correct.
Is that accurate?
That's
number one. Why don't you go ahead and give them that website again so we make sure we have that information out there.
www.EagleResearchAssociates.org. And oh, by the way, there's a couple of ways you can support us. We now have Capital One has issued us a Platinum Visa card. And if you apply for our Platinum Visa card, every time you use it, a portion of your the merchants pay a portion of that back to us as a donation. So it's one way you can support us without having to write us a check or go online and make a donation. And of course, we're a nonprofit, and we always need financial support. So if anyone can make a donation, we greatly appreciate it. And again, I'm available for speaking. And if you really want to know more about it, you can also buy my book. It's only $14.95 on Amazon.com. We have a link to it on our site. You can go to our site and see about the book. You can hear what people have said about it and what some of the comments have been about people who have actually purchased the book. And so there's different ways you can support us, and speaking is just one of them, as well as the other ways. And if there's any questions, anybody wants to know anything about us, all they have to do is hit contact us, fill in the information, shoot me an email, and I'll gladly respond to you. And I will be the one who responds to you, by the way. And if you call, I will be the one you talk to.
Well, you're certainly practicing what you preach. That's always nice to know. And I want people to know that the name of the book is Robbing You with a Keyboard Instead of a Gun, Cybercrime, How They Do It. And it's Lynn Edgington is the author. I'm looking at the table of contents here, and there's 12 different types of scams that you've outlined in there at least. Penny stock pump and dump, that high yield scam that you were talking about. You've got the red flag warnings in the book as well. Working from home, is it real or is it fake? Cash gifting, legal or illegal? There's a lot of information in this book, and I haven't read the whole book, but I've read enough of it to know that there's all kinds of good information here, and I want to congratulate you for putting it all together. It's a very thorough look at what's going on with cybercrime.
Well, I appreciate that, and I use real-world examples. They're not made up. Those are real case studies, by the way, so people should know that I'm talking about real things.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Lynn, it's been a pleasure, and it's been one of the more interesting shows we've had in a while. I mean, I don't know how many times I've had a brush with the possibility of being scammed, and fortunately, I don't think I have been at this time. I've probably been lucky. But nonetheless, I'll leave it with, if it's too good to be, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, and use that as your watchwords, and then do your research accordingly. That sound about right?
Sounds correct to me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for spending this time with us today, and good luck in everything you're doing, and I'm sure we'll probably cross paths again someday.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and I look forward to the opportunity of doing it again in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate you and all that you're doing. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today, everybody. This has been the Boomer the Babe Show. As always, we try to bring you good conversation. Today, we brought you some very good conversation with Mr. Lynn Edgington, author of the book Robbing You with a Keyboard Instead of a Gun, Cybercrime and How They Do It. It's well worth the read. It's well worth the $14.95, and it goes also to help promote his nonprofit that is he's undertaken as a life's work, is trying to eradicate some of this cybercrime and some of these scams, and also so people will be a little bit more aware of what's going on around them and be doing a little bit more due diligence, as they say. So you've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, and you can listen to the Boomer the Babe every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show. Check us out at boomerthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. Please sign up for our online magazine, Experience Speaks. It's Boomer Experience Speaks. It's absolutely free. It comes out every month. The next one should be out in the next couple of days. So you can look forward to that, all right, as well. Make sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a really great day, everybody, and we'll see you back again tomorrow.
To the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.